श्यामावदाता सतपत्र लोचन ईशंग वस्त्र सुरुचा सुपेशश सर्वे चतुर्बाहव उन्मिषान् मणि प्रवेक निष्काभरण सुवर्चस
स्काईभूष अवदाता ग्लोइंग शतपत्र लोटस फ्लावर लोचना आई पिशंग येलोइश वस्त्र क्लोथिंग सुरुचः ग्रेटली अट्रैक्टिव सुपेशश ग्रोइंग यूथफुल सर्वे ऑल ऑफ देम चतु फोर बाहवा हैं उन्मिषन राइजिंग लास्टर मनी पर्ल प्रवेक सुपीरियर क्वालिटी निष्का आभरण ऑर्नामेंटल मेडेलियन सुवचस एफुलजेंट ट्रांसलेशन The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers, their dress is of yellowish color, and their bodily features very attractive. They are just the age of glowing youth. They all have four hands. They are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they all appear to be effulgent. Please repeat after me. The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planet
are described
as having a glowing sky bluish complexion.
Their eyes resemble
lotus flowers.
Their dress is of yellowish color.
And their bodily features
very attractive.
They are just the age of growing youth.
They all have four hands.
They are all nicely decorated.
With pearl necklace.
With ornamental medallions. And they all appear to be effulgent. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The inhabitants in Vaikuntha are all personalities with spiritual bodily features not to be found in the material world. We can find the description in the revealed scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam. Impersonal descriptions of transcendence in the scriptures indicate that the bodily features of Vaikuntha Loka are never to be seen in any part of the universe. As there are different bodily features in different places of a particular planet, or as there are different bodily features between bodies in different planets, similarly The bodily features of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka are completely different from those in the material universe. For example, the four hands are distinct from the two hands in this world. So, this chapter is described here. Here the inhabitants of Vaikuntha's features have been described. So, we can see from this description that their bodily complexion is like the blue of the sky. Their body is very lustrous, very effulgent, brilliant, as if there is glowing light in their bodies. And they wear yellowish garments, and they're decorated with pearl necklaces and various other ornaments. So that is the description, the brief description of the inhabitants. Oh, and their body is of growing youth. That is, their body resembles to the body of a 16-year-old boy. Actually, this age, 16, when one is just about to enter into his youth, is a very, very beautiful age. Human body appears to be most beautiful at that age, which is called Navakishore in Sanskrit. Nava means growing and Kishore means youth. So Krishna's body is like that also. Krishna's body in his pastimes grows from childhood to the age of 16. And then Krishna's body doesn't grow. Even when Krishna was 120 years old at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when the battle of Kurukshetra was fought, Krishna was 120 years old. But does Krishna look like an old man? No. Krishna looks just like that 16-year-old boy that he is. So Krishna's body doesn't grow. Actually, Krishna's body and the inhabitants of the spiritual sky, the body of the inhabitants of the spiritual sky, are all transcendental and all eternal. They never go through the mundane changes like birth, death, old age, and disease. There is no old age in the spiritual sky. Only in the material nature there is old age, birth, death, and disease. In the spiritual side, they have eternal bodies, and those bodies are full of transcendental beauty. And those bodies are not made of material elements like our bodies. Our bodies are made of what? Our bodies are made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. With that, this gross body is made, and then we have another subtle body made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. And our body is actually very ugly. Matter is very, very ugly. And our bodies are ugly only when the body reaches the peak of youth, it displays some beauty. Because that is the time when the body is closest to the spirit soul. Or, on the other hand, we can put that the spirit soul's influence on the body is the greatest. The highest degree is reached at the time of youth. So, body actually, matter itself is ugly, and matter itself is very, very disgusting. Like we can see, when the body becomes dead, when the spirit leaves the body, then the body becomes so disgusting. Like the most beautiful person, can you imagine if you are, imagine the dead body of, even though the person may be the most beautiful person on earth. Prabhupada actually gives an example that everybody wants, Prabhupada was trying to prove that it is the spirit that we actually hanker for. It is the spirit that we like, not the body. And Prabhupada said, if you are asked to stay with the dead body of the most beautiful woman, will anyone agree?
No.
As soon as the spirit leaves, then the body becomes so disgusting. Even the most beautiful woman becomes horrible and frightening. I mean, most courageous man also will not want to be alone with the dead body of the most beautiful woman. And that shows that the spirit is the source of beauty. It's not the body that is the source of beauty. But when the spirit casts his influence to the maximum extent on this body, then only the body becomes beautiful. So in the body we can see in this nature, the youth is the most beautiful. At the time of youth, the body becomes most beautiful. And the reason is, at that time, the spirit influence on the body is in its peak. And when the body becomes old, then what happens? Actually, body is becoming old means spirit is withdrawing its influence over the body. And when this body becomes old, then it looks so horrible. Our skin becomes wrinkled, our spine becomes bent, our hair grows gray, and it must be so terrible to look at. But does it mean then that the spirit also becomes old at the time of youth, at the time of old age? When a person becomes old, does the spirit also become old? No. Our spirit always remains eternally fresh. So that is another proof that the spirit actually doesn't grow. The spirit actually doesn't change. And spirit's form is eternal. Like sometimes we notice, when we think ourselves also, we notice that when we, inwardly we all feel very youthful. Right? And Prabhupada says sometimes in our heart we feel that we are like children. An old man behaves like a child, sometimes we notice. Because the spirit is childish. And when we become situated in our spiritual form, that form never changes. Our unfortunate problem is that we have forgotten the spirit and we have just become obsessed with matter. We are simply concerned about our material body, and that's why we become susceptible to the changes of our material body. And here it has been pointed out that in the spiritual sky, especially in Vaikuntha, there is no old man. There is no old body. Everyone is youthful. Of course, in Vrindavan there is old people. Or rather, in Vrindavan there are old personalities, like Nanda Maharaj is old, elderly person. Upananda and Nanda Maharaj's brothers and others, there are elderly persons. They have beard, grayish, but they are never old as such, as a material calculation. Their body looks like that. Their body is elderly, but they are not old and senile. The other day actually I was seeing a painting of Purnamashi. Purnamashi is actually old. And that painting was Krishna was taking the gopis across the Jamuna in the boat. When the gopis were going to sell milk on the other side of Jamuna, then one day Krishna became the boatman. And so Krishna was taking the gopis across the river, and then there was a huge turmoil in the river and the boat was about to sink. And Krishna deliberately kept on swinging the boat, and everyone became very much afraid. All the gopis became very much afraid, and finally they all started to cry out to Krishna for help. So this is one of the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. And there, on the boat, there is Purnamashi also. Her hair is white, grey, and she is wearing a white cloth, white sari, because that's her dress. She wears white. And apparently, although she's an old woman, but her appearance is very youthful. Like she, although her hair is grey, but she looks just like any other gopi. So that shows, although they may be old in transcendental calculation, but they're not old in our material sense. Their form is eternally youthful. Like we noticed, Mother Jasoda also was quite elderly when Krishna was born. That we find from Krishna book. But when you see the paintings of Mother Jasoda, does she look old? No. She looks like the most beautiful young woman. Like the one painting that Parikshit, Muralidhar Prabhu painted, Jasoda Krishna, Mother Jasoda, Krishna on the lap of Mother Jasoda. You can see that it's such a Mother Jasoda's form. It's so youthful. So that is the spiritual nature. In the spiritual nature, everything is beautiful. And that beauty is not like the material beauty. That is a transcendental beauty. And we cannot appreciate unless and until we develop our transcendental vision. We cannot even see the spiritual nature. That's another thing that has been pointed out here, that these personalities in the spiritual sky, they are known, they are called adhokshaja. A spiritual nature is called adhokshaja, which means beyond our sense perceptions. With our material senses, we cannot appreciate the spiritual nature. We cannot perceive the spiritual nature. And material nature, material senses means what? What is the definition of material senses? Why did we develop our material senses? Because we wanted to enjoy ourselves without Krishna. That is the only definition of material senses. And in this nature, what we are doing, we are trying to enjoy without Krishna. The appreciation of beauty is a natural tendency of the spirit. But who is the supreme beauty? Who is the supreme beautiful? Guru Puja? Krishna. So it is our natural tendency to appreciate beauty, and naturally we should actually appreciate Krishna's beauty. But when you do not want to appreciate Krishna's beauty, but we want to enjoy ourselves without Krishna, then we begin to appreciate things for our enjoyment. And that becomes, and the degree of beauty is relative to the degree it gives our senses the pleasure. The degree of pleasure that it gives to our senses. In the material platform, we appreciate the beauty according to our sense enjoyment. When something is good for our sense enjoyment, we consider it to be beautiful. And if something is not enjoyable for our senses, we reject it as being ugly. So our sense gratification becomes the main criterion. And that is actually the cause of our material bondage. Our cause of our material bondage is our desire for sense enjoyment. And we notice that how, when we become devotee, how our values change. If we analyze our own development of values, then we can see that the things that we used to appreciate very much before, we become disgusted with that now. Like many of us were interested in eating all kinds of garbage, and those days we liked the garbage. But now if you see the garbage, we just feel disgusted and we run away from there. Same thing with, in some of us, it used to be intoxication. And now, or some people used to smoke, like I noticed it myself. Like when I take the flight, especially in a long flight, to get the smell of the smoke, people used to smoke cigarette, and now, although I'm sitting in the non-smoking area, but you get the smell of the smoke, cigarette smoke, and it's so disgusting. So we can see that our values are changing. And also it's another tendency we among us, ourselves, with the brahmacharis and sannyasis. Like when we see a beautiful woman, beautiful form of a woman, we immediately say, this is Maya Devi. Right? Although as a karmi we appreciate, we wanted to look at a beautiful woman. But now we know that this is actually the trick of Maya. Maya is just trying to bewilder us in that form. So we can see that how the values change. Now that we have become devotees, our values are changing. Like to give another very gross example, we can say, a pig's food is stool, right? A pig is stool and that's his food. So pig looks around for food. For stool. Looks around everywhere for stool. And when he gets some stool, he gets very happy. Now for a pig, the stool may be very, very delicious. But can you imagine yourself, when you see some stool, how you feel? Immediately you shudder with disgust and run away from there. Like I was experiencing it when I was in Paris. Paris is full of dog stool. Roads are full of dogs, so then I hated to go out because it is so disgusting just to, and even when I just think of it, you know, I shudder in disgust. So this is natural, like human beings cannot appreciate. For a human being, this is dirt. So the same way, when you transcend from the material platform and come to the spiritual platform, then the things that people, materialistic people impose their values upon, spiritualists become disgusted with that. And that's why Ramanacharya said that whenever the thought of sex life flushes across my mind, my lips curl in disgust and I spit at the thought. And that's what happens when we become situated on the spiritual platform. Like when any of this material thought, any of the thoughts of material enjoyment, that is enjoying without Krishna, comes in our mind, we immediately become disgusted with that thought. And then only when we become free from this material attachment, when we become free from the coverings of our material senses, then only we become situated on the transcendental platform. When we become free from our material desire for enjoyment, sense enjoyment, then we become free from our material senses. And then we become situated in our spiritual identity. And with our spiritual form, with our spiritual senses, with our spiritual consciousness, we can perceive the spiritual sky. Like this can be understood quite easily. Like we can see that this material nature is actually relative to our material senses. Like if we just close our eyes, does this room exist? If we close our ears, do we hear any sound? If we do not offer anything on our tongue, do we get the taste? If our nostrils are closed, do we hear, smell, do we smell anything? No. So this way we can see that by shutting our senses, we can become withdrawn from the nature. Like, so easily we can close our eyes and then nothing actually exists for us. But the problem is that although we can close our external senses, our problem actually begins with our internal sense, with our mind. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvam Indriya Indriyani Samjamma Ja Aste Manasa Smaran. One who closes his senses, external senses, but he dwells in his mind. In his mind, he keeps on remembering. And Krishna says that that kind of person who apparently may appear to be a yogi, but he is actually a cheat. Mithacharasa uchyate. He is actually a cheater. He is a pretender. So that is our problem. Like, we may try to control our senses, withdraw our senses, but our mind plays all kinds of tricks. Our mind keeps on dwelling in all kinds of images, all kinds of memories. So that is the problem. Now, how do we control the mind? How do we control the mind? Who will say? Yes, very good. But then what do you apply with your intelligence? the way to control the mind, you're correct. The way to control the mind is by the mantra. Mantra is the medicine for the mind. Manam trayate iti mantra. The sound vibration that delivers our mind is called mantra. Now, let us consider what actually happens. If we close our eyes and if we can feel that actually this nature is simply relative to our senses. This external material nature is just dependent on our senses. So, now I'm going to withdraw my senses from material nature. Right? And we can do that. We can close our eyes, we can stop hearing, and we can do all these things. And then we come to the point of neutrality. The material does not exist, but that doesn't really mean everything. But then when you begin to chant the holy name of the Lord, then what happens? That holy name actually takes us to the spiritual nature. When we chant Krishna, Krishna, then the memory of Krishna dawns in our consciousness. And that is how mantra actually takes us back to the spiritual sky. So that's why it's very important that we chant very attentively. And at the same time we meditate on the mantra. Actually, it is important to meditate on the mantra. That's why in Gayatri, when we say the Gayatri mantra, at the end of each mantra, there is a word called dhimahi. What is the meaning of dhimahi? Dhimahi means that I meditate. That is, we are projecting our consciousness onto that point only. Meditation means projection of the consciousness. We project our consciousness onto the sound vibration of the mantra. And that takes us back to the spiritual sky. And when we become fixed up on the mantra, then what happens? It also reveals step by step. In the beginning, what? In the beginning is Shravanam. We get the mantra from the Guru. Or we get to know about the spiritual nature from the spiritual master. That is the Shravanam. Then we begin to chant ourselves, Kirtanam. And when we chant, then Vishnu Smaranam. Then we remember the Lord. As we chant and meditate, then we remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Smaranam. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. Then, after Smaranam, when you remember Krishna, then what happens? You want to serve His lotus feet. Padashevanam, Archanam, Vandanam. Then we begin to worship the lotus feet of the Lord. Then we offer prayers to the Lord from the depth of our heart. Then we develop our friendship with the Lord, Shakham. Then we develop our servitorship to the Lord, and then we develop our friendship with the Lord, and then finally we offer ourselves to the Lord. So this is one way we can see that how the holy name or the mantra actually takes us back to the spiritual side. One becomes manifest. Naam, Roop. From Naam appears the Roop or the transcendental form of the Lord. And when the transcendental form of the Lord becomes manifest, then Lord's pastimes become manifest. Because the Lord is always playful. The Lord is always playing His pastimes. So His pastimes become manifest. And then as the pastimes become manifest, then His associates become manifest. His abode becomes manifest. When you see the pastimes of the Lord, then the pastimes of the Lord is taking place with His associates. So with the pastimes, Lord's associates become manifest. And where the pastimes is being performed, that is the abode of the Lord. So that dham or the abode becomes manifest. Then Lord's paraphernalia become manifest. So this way the whole spiritual sky becomes manifest through the name. So name is the first league. In this respect, there is another very important, interesting thing that we can consider about the name or mantra. It has been pointed out, if we consider the material nature has five different elements, right? Now, what is the grossest of all these five elements? Earth, then air, water, then fire, then air, then ether. So in the material nature, the subtlest element is, the most subtle of these five elements is ether. And sound, and ether produces what? Sound. Right? Now, in the material platform, sound is in the most subtle level. Right? Now, material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature. Now, spiritual nature is upside down. Right? So whatever is the subtlest in the material nature, whatever is the highest thing in the material nature, which is a reflection, is the lowest thing in the spiritual nature. Is that clear? Because, say for instance, you are seeing the reflection of a tree. Now in the reflection, what appears to be the highest? The root. But actually, in reality, the root is the lowest of the lowest part of the tree, isn't it? So same way, this material nature being a perverted reflection, the sound which appears to be the subtlest of all these five tanmatra or five objects of the senses, in the spiritual platform, that is actually the grossest. And so the sound is the lowermost region of the spiritual nature, and so we take shelter of the sound or the mantra, and through the mantra we go higher and higher into the spiritual nature. We begin from the sound, but then different other tanmatras become manifest. So what is immediately after, so this is how the spiritual nature becomes manifest, from sound or from the name of the Lord, the form becomes manifest. From the form, the pastimes become manifest. From the pastimes, his associates become manifest. Then his abode become manifest. And then his paraphernalia becomes manifest. So this is how we become qualified to perceive the spiritual nature. Besides that, there is no other way of perceiving the spiritual nature. Besides this, there is no other way. Besides chanting the holy name of the Lord, besides chanting the transcendental mantra under the proper direction of a bona fide spiritual master, we cannot approach the spiritual sky. And the highest one can get, if one takes the other process of jnana by knowledge, then the highest he can reach is Brahma Jyoti. But Brahma Jyoti is completely bewildering feature of the spiritual nature. Actually, once those who are approaching Brahma Jyoti, or once those who are desiring to perceive the Brahma Jyoti, they are actually committing spiritual suicide. They are simply destroying their spiritual identity. So this shows that there is no other way of approaching the Lord apart from devotional service. And that's why time and time again, today I was taking the summary of different chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, and I was noticing that how clearly Krishna makes it clear, how clearly Krishna is pointing out, or it has been pointed out in Srimad Bhagavatam, that without devotion there is no way of approaching the Lord. No way whatsoever. Devotion is the only way. By surrendering ourselves to the Lord, by rendering devotional service to the Lord, by developing our spontaneous love for the Lord, alone can we approach Him. Not by any other means. Not by knowledge or not by renunciation. Generally people think that these are the two ways to become spiritually elevated. By knowledge and by renunciation. Jnana and Vairagya. But for a devotee, those two things are impediments. Or also in the Vedas, two other sections have been given, like Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it has been described that Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda are nothing but two pots of poison. Apparently it may seem like spiritual activity or spiritual progress, but it's nothing but a poison, but a bowl of poison. So we must carefully reject them and take the nectar. And what is the nectar? The nectar is the devotional service. So that's why it's very important that we become fixed up in our understanding and take the direction of from the sadhu, from the shastra, and from the guru, and then our journey back to Godhead becomes easier. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question?
Once I heard the explanation that in Gokula, which is standing on the truth and that in Goloka, the journey is
ending. Earthly rules, right? Like in the earth, people grow old and so on and so forth. But Goloka Vrindavan, which is the spiritual sky, spiritual Vrindavan, there is no aging of the body. That's true. Yeah, I think some picture where Krishna decides everything. Krishna is the supreme controller. So Krishna can decide what's to be done and what's not to be done. Right? It is entirely up to Krishna. So if Krishna wants you to stay in Vaikuntha, then Krishna may keep you in Vaikuntha. But if Krishna wants you to get out of Vaikuntha, Then Krishna may kick you out of Vaikuntha. And it is general understanding that the spirit soul cannot be destroyed. Right? But another theory has been presented. Actually, the higher consideration is that since Krishna is the supreme predominant, Krishna is the supremely independent. So Krishna, if Krishna wants, Krishna can even destroy a spirit soul. All the spirit soul is indestructible, but if Krishna wants, Krishna can do it. Actually, it is beyond our understanding how indestructible can be destroyed. But that is the potency of the Lord. If the Lord wants, He can do anything.
The childhood pastimes of the Lord are only in Gokula,
there it takes place in a completely inconceivable way. Right? It's completely inconceivable. How we do not, but the childhood pastimes are there also. Like Mother Yashoda sees Krishna as a child. Right? Whereas gopis see Krishna, even though he is a child, in the eyes of the gopis, Krishna is a 16-year-old boy. And even in the Bhauma pastime, it is said that when Krishna was just a baby, he was just a little baby, and Nanda Maharaj was tending the cows with Krishna in his arms. And then some cows drifted away, were running away. So Nanda Maharaj needed to run after the cows to get the cows back. And so at that time Radharani was there. Radharani is a little older than Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj gave Krishna to Radharani, said that you hold that baby, you hold this child, let me go and get the cow. And so he ran after the cow, and as soon as Krishna saw Radharani, Krishna couldn't hide his form. So he became his original, ever youthful 16-year-old form. And he began to dance with Radharani. Actually, Krishna cannot, in front of Radharani, Krishna can't hide himself. Actually, Krishna's original form is that Navajovananchi. That is the original form, and the eternally youthful form. But he performs his pastimes. They are eternal. So we cannot say that Krishna's childhood pastimes are only in this planet, not in Goloka Vrindavan. That would mean that we are limiting Krishna's eternal pastimes. And the thing is that Krishna's original form is that eternally youthful form. And although Krishna hides that form, but he can't hide that form in front of Radha. Like another example is when Krishna ran away from the Rasa dance, then all the cowherd temples were looking for Krishna, right, in the forest of Vrindavan. So Krishna just took up the form of Narayan, took up the four-armed form, and he stood there. And the gopis saw him, and they offered obeisance and prayed, "Oh Lord Narayan, please give us our Krishna back. Please bless us that we can get our dearest object Krishna, we can find Krishna." And saying that, they went away. They offered obeisances and showed respect and went away. But when Radharani came, Krishna could not hide his original form. He became two-armed Shyamchundar.
Yeah. What is the name Radharani?
Radha means one who is very expert in Aradhana. You know, are you familiar with the expression, with the word Aradhana? Aradhana means worship or service. The one who is most expert in serving Krishna is Radha.
The inhabitants of Vaikuntha Lok have no idea about Krishna and his two-armed form?
Generally not. Only some fortunate ones get to know about that. They may be aware, they are actually aware, but they do not know that that form is actually higher than Vaikuntha. They think that that form, that is another pastime of Narayana. They think Vaikuntha is the highest and everything is below. And sometimes they see that on the earth planet, Narayana performs the pastimes as a cowherd boy. And they think it's one of his leelas, one of his pastimes. But when they're fortunate, then they get to know that actually this two-armed form belongs to Vrindavan, which is even higher than Vaikuntha.
So in one sense, when we are more fortunate than them, so we
get to know. Yes. Provided we become pure devotees of Krishna.
So you said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Goraka Vrindavan is divided into three parts, Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. So, but there's nothing said about Sri Chaitanya devotees.
Actually, the general division is that Golok has been divided into two chambers, right? And in the two chambers, one chamber is Vrindavan and the other is Navadvipa. Right? It's Krishna, same Krishna. In one chamber, or Vrindavan, Krishna is performing as the supreme enjoyer, right? And in the other chamber, the same Krishna is performing the other part of the same pastimes in the mood of magnanimity. Madhurjya and Udarjya. In Madhurjya, Krishna is performing his pastimes in Vrindavan. And in Udarjya, in magnanimity, Krishna is performing the pastimes as Lord Chaitanya. And Krishna is enjoying Krishna prema in Vrindavan. And the same Krishna is distributing that Krishna prema in Navadvipa. So in one way he's an enjoyer, in the other one he's a distributor. So these are the two different general discrimination or general division. And but this Vrindavan again has three chambers, right? That is the innermost one, or three regions you can say. The innermost one is Vrindavan, right? Then the outer one is Mathura. And then further beyond that is Dwarka. And the same Krishna is performing his pastimes. But according to his placement or position, Krishna is Purna. In Dwarka, Krishna is Purna, the complete. In Mathura, Krishna is more complete, and in Vrindavan, Krishna is most complete. So that kind of division has been made there. Mayapur is also divided in three. That is, the general place is known as Gold Mandal. And that is the Mathura Mandal. The whole place is called Mathura Mandal. Right? And the same way this is called Gold Mandal. And then in Gold Mandal, the innermost part is Navadvip. Inner part is Navadvip. And the innermost part is Mayapur.
Does it mean that we have to develop our spiritual senses here fully before we have the chance to go back to the earth?
No, we simply have to try. We cannot actually develop it ourselves. We simply have to try by serving Krishna, by being surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna will help us to develop our senses. But of course, unless and until our spiritual senses fully develop, we cannot go back to the spiritual sky. So regarding that, it has been pointed out that Krishna, this is when we become almost purified. But not fully purified. When we become almost purified, then we are born we get a chance to be born in some universe where Krishna's pastimes are going on. Right? And then, when we participate in Krishna's, by participating in Krishna's pastimes, all the rough edges are polished out. And then, we are transferred to the Goloka. That is one way, but of course Sanatana Goswami explained in Brihad Bhagavatam that how that is another way of approaching. Like, there is no hard and fast rule that all the living entities have to go the same way. Different living entities will go different way. But Sanatana Goswami is explaining that how one living entity is going from higher planet to higher planet, then Vaikuntha, then Ajodhya, then Mathura, and Dwarka.
But is it possible to advance from one higher planet to another, even higher?
Yeah. Yeah. By chanting the mantra, by becoming more and more fixed up in Krishna consciousness, we go higher and higher. Right? Actually, our going higher or lower is a matter of consciousness. When our consciousness is more awake, then we go higher. When our consciousness is closed, then we go lower. Right? So, as our consciousness develops, with Krishna consciousness, we go higher and higher. So that's why it's very, very significant that Prabhupada says that in Krishna consciousness, you never come down. Right? You never come down. You go higher and higher. And that's one wonderful thing that consoles us the more, very much. That even though we may not go back to Godhead, but at least the next life is going to be better than this one. Right? That is guaranteed. If we pursue, if we do not fall down, if we don't deviate from Krishna consciousness, then this is at least guaranteed that the next life is going to be better. And in our life we see, in our devotional life, that it is gradually becoming better and better. We are actually advancing higher and higher. Right? And what does it mean? Our consciousness is becoming more and more awake. Right? As long as we stay in Krishna by following the regular principles and chanting the holy name, our consciousness becomes more and more awake. That means we go higher and higher.
What about jhana and prosperity in Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, they are just secondary.
Because sometimes we have to do something which we maybe not really know why, or we have to take up some austerity.
Yeah. It is said that, you see, the mother of devotion, bhakti, the mother is bhakti, right? And the mother devotion has got two sons. And those two sons are jnana and vairagya, knowledge and jnana. So wherever the mother is, the son follows. Right? So when you become a devotee of Krishna, jnana and vairagya automatically become manifest. You don't have to separately endeavor. Renunciation and knowledge will automatically come to you. Yeah.
If one usually puts all the value on, does it mean that most probably we will go to the mindful side of Krishna consciousness?
Yeah. Yeah. Because he is giving out Krishna. Distributor means a preacher. And a person who is a preacher, he is with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
The third kind of Srimad Bhagavatam is called the
status quo.
Status
quo. Status quo means the real situation. Today I thought of also talking about Narottam Das Thakur, but it's already quite late and still there are no questions. So I think this evening I'll just discuss about Narottam Das Thakur.
Sure.
And today is Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day. Yeah, Harvey.
You said in the spiritual world of nature, is there the sound and flesh of the mothers or the girls? So what's in that?
Next will be touch. air. Of course, we must understand that the spiritual nature is transcendental and it's absolute. So, we cannot really make any define it. That's why, well, I was about to explain, but then I stopped because I felt that that wouldn't be proper. Because you may, when you are entering into that region, then you have some similarity between the border to border. Right. But once you have crossed the border, then there is no similarity. Then it's, you know, you enter into another kingdom altogether. Right? So that's how we have to understand. That's why we see that from Nam doesn't immediately come to Padasevana. From Nam comes Rupa. Right? So from Nam, the form becomes manifest. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, from the name, Lord's form appears, form becomes manifest. So you see, since we are approaching from the material direction, the highest region of the material is the borderline, and that is the entrance to the spiritual sky. So there is, you know, we can relate to that, this area. But once you are in that other side, then there is no, you cannot make it in resemblance as such. Is that clear? Because I don't want to speculate. So, did you have a question? Does anybody have any more question?
You said there is knowledge and renunciation at the bottom, then there is the loving devotion. Huh. And this is a question of heart, I guess. Sometimes it seems there is this understanding this could be forced or pressed.
What? Renunciation?
No, loving devotion. Yeah. So, what is the source of this understanding, this kind of understanding?
You have to tell again.
Yeah. You spoke about knowledge and renunciation and the bhakti, and there's the loving devotion. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it seems there's this understanding, loving devotion could be forced.
Mm-hmm.
So how is this?
That is something like, you know, when you're studying something, then in the beginning you memorize. Right? You read it again and again and again loudly and you memorize it. But then you acquire the knowledge yourself. Then you do not have to memorize as much. So while practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, devotional service and practice, sometimes you practice knowledge. Sometimes you practice renunciation. But that's only a part of the practice. But when devotion actually dawns in our heart, then renunciation and knowledge become spontaneously manifest. Then you do not have to separately endeavor for knowledge or separately endeavor for renunciation. It will automatically become